Ingrid Angara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey. Today, for our sixth Business of Collaboration podcast, we're here in Barcelona at the Majestic Hotel with our guest Ricardo Baeza-Yates. He is CTO of Intent, a semantic search technology company located in California, and CEO of Intent Hispania, an R&D division in Barcelona, Spain. Our second guest is Francesc Miralles. He is the Academic Dean at La Salle Ramon Llull University and the Director of the Innova Institute. Ricardo is born in Chile and is now living between Palo Alto and Barcelona. He prefers to combine work and holidays and visit new places every time. Francesc is from Barcelona, working in telecom industry before becoming a professor at the Pompeu Fabra University. He likes to explore the world while doing holidays, but also has a special place in Castello, where he goes to with his wife every summer. One more thing, he has his creative moments in the mornings. We will talk about what innovation is, the secret of productivity, how to work with professors to create innovative products inside corporates. We will discuss the importance of change management and how the change of the culture is critical to survive as a business. If you want to learn more about Ricardo and Francesc after this podcast, you can read the interviews with them on noco.net.
Welcome, Francesc. Welcome, Ricardo. We are here in Barcelona in the Majestic Hotel. So my question is for you both. Do you have a productivity secret? I remember, Ricardo, you told me once you are using your treats on the plane to work. So how do you do it?
So it's true that it's a good time to think and to write and then to read. So I use a lot of that time. But I think that one secret, if it's a secret, is that first you don't have to think in this question. You just have to do it. One of my secrets is just do it. And maybe I have another one, but really I don't know what it is because I just do it. So I think if you do your best every time and you do, for example, the most urgent thing every time, that's why things work with me. I mean, I have a lot of things to do with this. Every day, it's like I always never finish what I have to do, but I just take the most important thing next.
No, in my case, I think that I agree with Ricardo in almost all the ideas that he said. I also use my traveling time to work, to read, and to spend some time trying to increase my productivity. But I have no thought of that. No, but I think that in my case, I think that one of the important things is about teams. No, I am in charge of different units. At the same time, I have a good team, a strong team that really works for that. No, and then my job there is more a strategic plan or a vision there. No, and try to align the work of the team with the strategic plan and so on. It's a kind of going with them to our goals. No? This combination of a strategic focus and team, I think that makes things easier in some sense. Also, you know, when you are involved in a kind of project, in my case with La Salle at the University Ramon Llull, you need to help the institution to grow in some sense. No? And that means to try to just put different things together. And there is a final thing in the question, not related to family and friends and these kind of things. I think that the problem there is a kind of commitment or agreement. No? Well, we agree that I am going to spend some time with my family in spite of my busy time at work. No, and try to have a kind of balance there. I think that trying to agree on this balance, it makes things easier, at least in my case. I know other cases that that's not been the case, but, you know, in my case, it worked very well. Well, I have been with my wife for 40 years.
I think your point about the teams is very important because I was thinking while you were saying that's also a key thing. I mean, if you hire smart people, then your productivity looks much larger because you have people that you can really delegate a lot of work, and you know that they will do it well.
Yeah.
So that's also very important.
Yeah, and in my case, this smartness thing is not related to the intelligence. I think that it's more related to the involvement of member of the team in the project, no? In that sense, probably it's not always commitment is a kind of interesting thing there, no? Being part of the team and being part of the strategic project, that means a lot. No?
Yeah, responsibility.
Yes. Responsible.
Yeah. In my case, because I'm doing technology, they also should be smarter. But I think that is, I take it for granted. I mean, if they're not responsible, we never hire the person.
Yeah, let's say that both things are not enough themselves. Yeah. No? We need a combination of both.
No? Yeah, both are necessary.
Yes.
So you both working and doing research. My question is this. How do you envision the future, and how do you keep up to date with all this overload of available information?
I don't know. Sorry about that, but I don't. I think the problem is to select, in some sense, to be able to decide what is interesting for you and what is not interesting for you. You must admit that you are not going to be able to manage all this overload of information. That's crazy. It's impossible. No? And then the idea is to be try to focus on your interest and try to get there good sources, the best sources that you can find in order to just satisfy your needs. And that's it makes no sense to go in the other way around. I am going to be aware of what's happening in the world, that's not going to be manageable. And the idea is to just to trust on some kind of source and then try to align the most important is not to have all the information, is to have the information that allow you to make the best decisions or the optimal decisions in your case. I don't know. I think that the problem is not to have all the information, but to have that information that is useful for you in your decision making process.
So it is. It's very hard to envision the future, and I prefer to quote Alan Kay that said that instead of predicting the future, the best way is to build the future. So I guess then the one way to say that you envision the future is what you would like the future to be. And regarding the information overload, I think that as Frances says, you need to filter the information in such a way that it becomes manageable. And personally, I have two ways to keep up with the state of the art. So the one thing is to go to the main conferences, research conferences in your field. So like, let's say I like to be up to date in search technology, then you go to the information retrieval top conference, CIR, or you go to the web search and data mining conference or the web conference where you know about web search. So if you go to 2-3 conferences per year, not only you get up to date of the state of the art, but also you meet all the right people that you should know to help you also doing that. And if you meet that people and you create a network, for example, you have the right network in Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, I would say that the most interesting things I have read in the last at least 2 years have been recommended by a colleague. And for me, that's the best way to... This work just appeared, or this thing just happened, and I try to do the same. So I try also to post things that other people may be interested in, because it's like it's a both way thing. If you will just wait for people to give you recommendations and you don't give any, then it doesn't work.
I like your quote about the best way to create the future is to build it. Because we use this quote in Noco, in one of the inspirational quotes we are posting in LinkedIn and Twitter and Instagram. It's about this. You have to create the future you want to have. It's one of the things why we create Noco.
It's a kind of being an active part of the developing of the world, no? In the sense that if you are a kind of reactive, no? That's not going to help you, no? Then the idea is to be some kind of, I don't know if proactive is the word here, but in any case, active building what the future is going to be in some sense. That doesn't mean that you are going to predict the future. That's not the way. But the idea is to be conscious that part of that is on your hands.
Yeah, exactly. As well, it's like to share the information is very important in this kind of overload of information we have now.
Yeah. There is also another perspective that is that it makes no sense to try to decide if this information is going to be good or not. You must submit that to your network and trying to see what the network says, in the sense that it is not going to be my decision, it's going to be the agreement of the network. Probably it's not going to be the best from a solution from a technical point of view, but probably it's the best supported by the community. And that, in some sense, makes a lot of sense, no? in the idea is it's not important what is the best solution in the sense of the technical feature and so on, but that has been adopted the best for the community or by the community.
Yeah. So going more to the transfer of the knowledge and technology, what are the challenges to transfer the technology or research from university to society? Because I remember, Francesc, you are doing part of the research on technology transfer.
Yeah. I think that the main challenge there, no? You talk about, yes, the challenge, no? I think that the main challenge there is to understand all participants. They should understand that they are part of a kind of ecosystem or a system. Because it's not a matter of trying to have a kind of provider-customer relationship, but the goal of all participants there is to make things better or create wealth, whatever you want. And from this perspective, what you have is that, well, what is my role? What is the researcher's role? What is the company's role there? And then I think that to understand that is the main challenge there, because at least here in Spain, I don't know in other part of the world, probably in Germany is different, and in Latin America is also different, but at least in Spain, this feeling is not very common. I think that companies think, or firms think, that they are just trying to satisfy customers, and researchers are trying to build research or research work or whatever, but they don't think that they are in the same system. And that's a kind of problem. And I have had a lot of experience on that. Some researchers that when I used to be in the Generalitat, the regional government, and I just received some research, and they told me, well, tell me what I must do to satisfy Generalitat. Well, that's not the problem. Not the problem is, how are you contributing to the world of the country or the region, and then based on my plans as a manager of the public system, we will try to see if your work fits with our plans. No? And if they don't fit, probably you will have to change, but that's going to be your decision there. No? I think it's a kind of mentality there. No? And I think that's, as a challenge, I think that's the most important one.
And you, Ricardo, because you have this double role at university and in the company, and you can easily transfer your research into the company. But how you are doing it?
Yeah, I think Francesc is the expert here, but yeah, in being the same person both sides is the easiest way to solve all the challenges, but I don't think that works all the time. I would say that whenever you want to transfer something, the first challenge is the willing of the two sides to make it happen. That will not always exist in both sides. So companies sometimes don't want to work with academia because of the perception that things will be slower or will be more difficult. And at the same time, many researchers don't want to work with industry because it's, they have other incentives that it's much more comfortable not to do it. So I think this is the first challenge. So put two sides together at work. So they need to want to do it, and also they need to find the right match to do it. So in my experience, most successful collaborations are because of people that already know each other, and they're friends, and they decide, okay, let's do something together, and that's the simple ways to have a success. So the question, I guess, for you will be how you can do it without people being friends. And I think that's the main challenge. So you need to create the will in both sides, so you have the right incentives. And then you have to find these the right matches, not only at the topic level, but also at the personal level.
No, I think the incentive of the researchers are not focused on that. Spain reached the 9th position in the world as scientific production, and that has been maintained along the years. But when you look at the statistics on the transfer, that's a kind of disaster. The amount of money that is involved in the relationship between companies and universities is a kind of, you know, less than zero. No? It means it doesn't exist. No? And that means what happens with all this scientific production? Where is that going to? No? Just on publications, just on journals? That doesn't help to the wealth of the country.
Spain things are different in the sense that I think the challenges are the same, the problems are the same, but the level of the transfer is much different. Like the U.S. and Japan, U.K., Germany, I think will be much different and better. Not sure, but trying to understand what would be one explanation of this. Maybe I think one part is that if the age of the researcher population. I would say that in other countries, young researchers have more opportunities to be part of the university, and then that also, because they're younger, they want to do more like things with industry and then be more entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And could be one explanation that maybe that scientific production is just the same as the people that have been there like 20 years, and not people that have been there like the last 2 years. And we know that there are many people, many researchers in Spain go abroad. Yeah. To find the position.
That's true. And there is a research on that, on opening innovation, how to create open environments to promote innovation in regions. And one of the results of that research was that both sides, companies and universities, have to change the capabilities that they have in order to work together. Otherwise, they are not going to be able. They don't think on working with the others. It's a more cultural problem, in some sense, that kind of, you know, researchers don't learn how to get in touch to companies. As this is the culture, companies, they don't care about what university is doing or not. That's change the system in order to make that possible.
Change the mindset and the culture. Yeah.
We were joking with Cara before that maybe easier to change the people than to change the mind of the people. So I guess you're in agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think, I did some transformations in company, and one of the main steps we have to do first is to change the KPIs, to say there is some kind of authority we want to will the willingness to change, and then it's more, the rest is bottom up. So I remember with innovation to create a new innovation culture, here is to change the mindset to more entrepreneur innovation, digital mindset, open mindset. I remember we set up, first basic, simple KPIs to start the change. So it was everybody has to create ideas. It was very simple. And then the other work was more in bringing people together, breaking down the silos, and believing innovation can be done even if we keep system running. So that's one of the basics to start the change, and could be the same for the industry. First a basic KPI, and then starting to break the silo down.
Yeah, the problem is who builds the KPIs, in the sense that, at least here in Spain, the regulation in the university is based on the, or is built by professors, no? And they are not interested in some sense. Well, I am just saying that, I am just making a kind of generalization, but that's probably is not the case for everybody. And that's true, at least for example in our case, we think the focus, we have the, another kind of focus. But in any case, it's the kind of difficult to change that from the perspective of someone that is just supporting the system. No? And the idea is, I think that we need to new KPIs, but also new policies in order to help that idea. No? You mean, if you want to reach 9th position in the world in terms of scientific production, that's a kind of compatible with making things easier between companies and universities, no? And that you must decide one thing or the other. You cannot manage both of them, no? And then the idea is to kind of, is it important to improve this relationship between companies and universities? In that case, what can we do in order to build that, no? Probably through some kind of specific KPIs, or probably some kind also. Well, you know, the European Union is working on that. No? It's trying to include companies, small companies, SMEs companies in the project and so on and so on. That's a kind of, you know, that's a kind of idea. But it's also a kind of very important cultural problem, as we said before. No, I remember that when I was younger, when I went to the States, it was almost, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago. One of my friends was there. He was in a kind of a visiting scholarship in some place there in Boulder, Colorado. And the first thing that he told me when I arrived, and just he explained about how the American researchers were doing research there and so on, he said, the first thing that the attendants asked the presenter of a new research is, what is that usable for in terms of wealth, no? And they don't care if they are going to publish that or not, for sure, otherwise it wouldn't make sense, but at the same time, how is that going to be used in firms, in the economy, and so on. And I have not experienced that in Spain, no? I don't know if that's
yeah. No, something very standard in the U.S. universities today is that basically every researcher is expected to work with industry one day per week.
Yeah. Like, one day per week.
Yeah, they like if you want to do consulting or entrepreneurship, that's standard in many top universities. That 20% of your time should be devoted for that. Of course, it's optional; they're not forced to do it. Mm. But if you want to do it, you can do it. So it's not like we're not to put problems to do that. So you're welcome to do that. And because of many universities, that's one way to bring funding to universities. There are many large projects with industry.
Yeah, you transfer very easily the knowledge with consulting, and then you get paid, and you can fund the research.
And also there's another reason to do it, because, I mean, these are top people. Mm. So if they cannot increase their salary in some way, industry will take them.
Yeah.
So it's one way to keep them at the university. Mm.
Yeah, a very good point.
Yeah. And also the faculty learn capabilities to get usable for companies, and that's good too, because it's a kind of market, no? If I have something to say, companies are going to hire me, and I want to increase my salary. This kind of things. In Spain, you have this position that, you know, that if you do that in the university, that's a kind of, you are suspicious, no?
Yes, that's kind of illegal. At least unethical.
So I have another question, because I think we got this question for several professors, and I think it's very relevant. Because you are working or have worked in companies. What is the impact on a company of one professor working with this business? And how we can define this value of professor working with businesses and companies on this kind of collaboration?
So I think that in my case that I always have these two hats at the same time. For the business, I mean, for the business to use the state, like in technology, the state of the art, I think this is the main value, the main impact. I mean, you can do many things in many ways, but if you do it the best way possible, that will give you more competitiveness. So this is the main value for the business. So you are using the best possible technology in your solution. On the other hand, for the researcher, working with the business is, I guess, the best way to validate a lot of assumptions that you have in your research. I mean, you can invent a new world, but maybe completely unrealistic and cannot be used in practice. So it has to do with what you said before. I mean, like, is this usable? Mm-hmm. So I think not only you validate all your assumptions, but many times you find new problems that you were never thought about it because you are in practice. Mm-hmm. And in practice, things are not the same as in theory. I mean, this famous saying that in theory, practice and theory should be the same, but in practice are not. So I think the best way to have like new research problems that are realistic, and then you can make sure that your work will be usable, is to get the problems from this experience.
Yeah. I totally agree. This idea of a kind of companies as a kind of test bed for the ideas of researchers, that's a kind of very useful from this perspective. But I understand also that there are different levels. And one thing that researchers must, or faculty must, avoid in their relationship with companies trying to do things that companies can do. I mean, the day-to-day operations, that doesn't make sense. To do the same that companies doing, that makes, I mean, programming on these kind of things, so that makes no sense. But on the other side, you can help on the idea of R&D, no? What are going to be the new trends? We must understand that researchers are closer to the new trends and to the new ideas and so on than companies. And then there is a kind of bridge there, no? The companies cannot be, in some sense, on the cutting edge things all the time, no? And probably most of the not. All faculty are on the same level, and then using different faculties can help you to have a kind of deep or vision of what is going on the area. No? And that's one thing that makes sense, no? To have this contact with R&D. And the other thing is about trends, no? How the evolution of the technology is going on, no? And probably this perspective is easier to have in these companies, that in this conference that Ricardo mentioned before, no, that than companies that cannot be attending this kind of conference. No? And the third point is about faculty for the C-level guys can be very important, no? Because all the corporate staff are just based on trying to solve the strategic problems of the company, but they don't have time to think in a kind of, you know, quiet moment and try to just understand how things are going. In my experience, during a period I was working with different companies, and CEO there realized with most companies, no, the help that I could provide in trying to understand the problems in their companies when they are not able to understand, because they were just a kind of, they were considering just one perspective, no? And helping them to see the different perspectives that can be useful for them. And you can do that if you are out of the problem. If you are in the problem, you cannot solve that. No? And then as they have their own goals and their own strategic plan and so on and so on, their life is on that plan. And probably a kind of different perspective from outside can help them, for sure that can help, no? In order to see what are the main things there, no? the main influence there. And I think that at this level, the C-level, the R&D and the trends of that could be where the faculty can be more productive. No? And trying also, R&D includes also doing some kind of new experiments or new technology, new applications and so on. That can be done usually in the university. It's more difficult in companies.
I think that also another dimension for the impact. I mean, after listening to your point, is that it's basically who is the one interested in the result. Because, for example, you can always say, for example, even before collaborating, you can do like an internship in a business. So that's another way to create the collaboration. It's like you go, let's say you will do a visit as 3 months as like a business researcher, and then I will basically find out what you need, how I can help you. And after that happened, there are maybe two cases of possibilities. One will be, I found the problem in what you are doing, and then I can replace something with something much better and new. And of course, in that case, the person in the industry will be right away very interested. And then maybe the impact will be much larger because the industry is pushing for that. But the other one is like more like when you come from the innovation side and you say, I have a new way to do everything, all this. But then that needs a major change. And then you are pushing that, not the industry. It's more like you are really selling the innovation. And you know, selling is the hardest part. You are not improving the process, you are changing the whole process. So there the impact will be harder to get sometimes because of this willingness, as I said before, changes in one side.
I am just thinking, in this case, of how to generate value. I am thinking about business perspective.
Well, as usual, you need to validate it, so you can. You have to go first to prototyping, to show the proof of concept that this will work. And of course, this is not enough yet. Second, you need to do like in internet, you will do some kind of A/B testing, trying to see if the solution will work. And you not only have to show that things are better, but that you need to know to also do the feasibility of the technology. For example, in internet, you need to show that it's scalable. There's not enough to be better. You need to do it in a large scale, so faster, maybe more people, more users, and so on. So, of course, that's a longer road, and you need to also do maybe more investment. There's always this thing, okay, let's do it simple, and we know, and not try to get to a point where maybe we don't know. And that's more difficult, but I think if you want to be competitive and succeed in your business, if you have competition, you don't have a choice at that. That's my perspective.
No, that's true. I think that the role of the university should be just on the prototype phase, more than that.
Right.
Otherwise, that's kind of, you know, in that case, if you are going to go with that more than the prototype, then you need to have a kind of a firm structure. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Or you can go at least on the consulting phase. So
yeah, okay.
You can go along with the whole project, advising the company, so to make sure that your idea is implemented the right way. Because sometimes they say, "Oh, it failed." This is not what I'm thinking.
No, and the company must be aware that at the end, they should take control of the new device or whatever.
And you need to transfer everything.
That's the transfer. Yes. And we need
know-how,
in that case, yes, you need to transfer the whole know-how. That's there is no substitution there.
Sometimes people from the business can go and do an internship with the researcher too. That's not so often, but happens often. But it's also very important. It's not one way; it's two ways.
So then how do you find the success when working together, a professor and a business, and sometimes including a startup? Do you have an example from your experience?
So I would say that depends on the KPI, but if you have a KPI, it's very easy to define success. So this usually should be the case. You have a specific KPI that you say, I don't know, for example, in the internet world would be things like the revenue increase that much, or could be the users increase that much, or the performance increase that much. So these are very easy to measure. But of course, I guess the first things in this assess would be just was used in production. So basically went from the phase of prototyping to production in the system. I think this is just already the first success, because if you don't move to production, you cannot even do the validation and testing on the practical side. And this is very important. At least you can say, okay, we went into production, we had an initial success, but maybe the KPI didn't increase that much to, for example, to justify changing the system to the new thing. So, but I think this will be the first success in going to production. And then will be just what happened with the KPI.
Yeah. In some cases, it depends. I think, I don't know if we can talk of success. Well, in order to talk to success, we need some kind of KPI. But we can also talk about best practices, no, in the sense of how best practices can be just included or incorporated in companies. No? And I think that the main thing there is this kind of what I said before, no, being aware that we are in a kind of system, and then we need to trust each other. No? And some examples of that. We have been working with a power company here in Catalonia that tried to just to move to another perspective of R&D. No? They were a kind of classic R&D closed structure, and they wanted to move to a more, let's say, open idea of R&D, no? Being aware that probably the best solutions are not inside the company, probably are outside the company, this idea of shared work and so on. But what they did was to try to create this kind of living labs, where to just make creative sessions and try to capture new ideas and so on. And we helped them in doing that, no? Because they didn't know about that. And then we have been working on that in our transfer focus and so on, and we helped them not to build ideas, but to gain the capabilities to create living labs. And that's another kind of, because I just had an example a couple of weeks ago. No, it was a consultancy company here in Barcelona too. They are working for the regional government, and they know that the regional government need to improve in some sense of innovation and so on. And he told me, we would like to help them in the innovation process. No? And they were proposing a kind of innovation process, let's say classical, 1.0 process. No? And then I said, well, we can help you to help your customers trying to have a kind of more dynamic design thinking approach, open innovation approach, and so on. It's kind of, you know, in that case was the kind of chain, no? The university could help the consultancy company can get the consultant. We cannot go as a university to the regional government and trying to solve the problem for a specific department. We cannot do that, but we can just help the company to incorporate the consultancy company to incorporate this new best practice in order to help that. And in that sense, what we and the consultancy company in the regional government must feel that they are part of the system, the innovation system, and each one of the participants there have a different kind of role. And that's the idea of the best practice there.
So one of the basic questions after talking about all this technology transfer and collaboration is, what is innovation for you?
Back to basics. It seems so hard to define innovation. I mean, many people have tried. I would do like a very pragmatic definition. Is for me, innovation will be when I see something that I say, oh, this is interesting, I never thought about it. But then you say, it's obvious. It makes complete sense to me, because it's not enough to be something original and new, has to really change things. And things change when become obvious to you. And there's so many obvious things that were not obvious before you knew them. Mm. And there's a book about that.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a very pragmatic definition of innovation.
It is the idea of something like that. No? Well, something new is perceived to be usable in some sense.
But more than that, because there are many new things that can be useful. But for example, the other day I saw a video of a new shower curtain where you can put all your devices and then use it while you were in showering. Well, yeah, it's usable. I could use it, but I don't think it's what you want people doing. So it's not obvious to me.
that you want to basically watch a TV while showering or not even talking to your friends. So there are many new things that are sometimes I feel like they're like not really on the right direction.
Yeah, there is another perspective about what is more innovation management than innovation itself. No? This idea of in some sense, it has been said that innovation, from a management perspective, is a kind of new way to focus on the market, no? Because we were used of this old classical marketing approach perspective, and now an innovation perspective is more based on how to build things, but from the business perspective, no? Right. How to new things it from the business, and that means new market, that means new satisfying new needs, and this kind of things, no? The technology IT has been a kind of disruptor on that, no? In the sense that IT has created the possibility to build very different new things of relation among people and so on, and that's create new opportunities for companies or for people. And this is a kind of innovation perspective of management.
Yeah, also because things can be new in a different way. And what I mean about that is like maybe the object itself is not new.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. But what is different is that it now is cheaper, now has, a lot of smaller CO2 footprint, or, yeah, for example, it's biodegradable. I mean, basically, you can recycle it. Mm-hmm. So there are many ways you can think that it are better for, yeah, society. Mm-hmm. The object has been changed, but the, yeah, way that the object was produced changed, and that's also, yeah, innovation.
Yeah. And at the end, that satisfies new needs, or, yes, not new needs, but, yeah, needs that were not satisfied before. No? And that's this goal of the strategic planners, to find new ways to satisfy existing needs. That's a kind of what innovation is, or could be, no, in that sense.
One of the main challenges always in innovation management is how we influence people, in this case, C-level, for instance, or consumers, to adapt this new innovation, or this research, or this disruption, if we say it's a big change. So how do you manage this influence process?
I have a point there. No? Again, culture is there, no? And there is a research that was studying how IT investment transform into a strategic or better performance of the companies, and that was in the States. No, they follow different companies from, I don't know, among 10 or 15 years, based on the statistics of the U.S. government. No, and they found that there are two kinds of companies: those that systematically convert IT investment in performance, in better performance, and those companies that systematically fail converting new IT investment in significant better performance. No? And that what the conclusion is that the kind of culture, there are companies that culturally are just, they know or has the capabilities to do that, this transformation in a good way. There are others that systematically are not doing that.
And the second half, a culture on failing.
Yeah, that's true. But more than that, that was studied under the different cycles of the economy, and there are some points on the economy where there is a kind of optimistic perspective of what IT can do, and there are other periods where there is a kind of pessimistic, no? And what was clear, or what was clear in the research, and that was published in the communications of the ACM, in the optimistic cycle of the economy, some of the, let's say, not well transformers, they reach some kind of better performance. But when the cycle went down, they again went back, and was a kind of let's say opportunistic and conjunctural situation that they. I mean that. There is a lot of things to do from the perspective of the capabilities, and probably the way is not how to innovate, but how can I change my company in order to be able to get better performance when we invest in innovation or IT or whatever. No? And of course, that's not basic IT, that's not infrastructure IT, that is strategic IT. No? I mean, this IT that allows you to go to another market or whatever. No? New strategic health. It's a problem, a problem of the how companies, and that happened in the States, imagine that in other countries. No?
I agree. I think if you think in just innovation without thinking the people that will use it, you will fail anyway. So sometimes you need to also invest on how to do cultural change, as you were saying. Also to do changes in the processes, because that may disrupt the way you are doing things. And there's a lot of people that are working on change management, because at the end that's really important, how you manage change. For example, in some cases, maybe the success was because there are companies that basically have a culture of continuous change.
Yeah.
So it's part of the culture. I mean, there's nothing that is like permanent. Mm-hmm. Everything is changing.
Yes.
And in like an internet company, that's true almost all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. And we have some example of that. IBM is one example of this continued change, no? In order to do that.
After some failure.
Yes, of course. Yeah, no, but that's part of the...
You change or you die.
Yeah. And you can die when you change, but in any case, you might change, no?
Yeah.
And also, the other thing is that not all, there is no, this kind of things that everything is good for everyone, no? In the sense that, I don't know, I have an example, a personal example on that, no? I am a good user of LinkedIn, and I am a good user of Twitter. And I have an account in Facebook, but I don't use Facebook. That's my profile on the.
And now you have to have one in Noco.
Yes, that's for sure. I am just one, a newcomer in Noco. No? But on the other side, my wife, that is not a techie person there for sure, she is a kind of heavy user of Facebook. It's completely different to me. And she is not using Twitter, and she's not using LinkedIn. But that's a kind of compliment. That probably that's why we have been together for 40 years. But in any sense, I mean that every technology, every innovation adapts to different people, to different profile of people, and that's part of the equation in some sense.
Yeah. Also, in IT, there are many innovations that are not used for the original purpose of the innovation.
Yeah.
The best systems are usually things that were designed for a different goal, but now they're the standard because it was not so much about the goal, it was more about the quality of the product.
Yeah.
Things like Unix, things like that. I mean, what is the best operating system?
Yeah,
was designed for telephonic systems, but now is basically one of the standards. And there are many examples like that.
I know you for many, many years. I don't know how many. 2005, maybe we met in the Pompeu Fabra University. You both?
It was around 15 years ago.
Yeah, I know you, but our audience know. So I have some quick questions. Like maybe they can know you a bit better after this technical question. So what is your favorite place for holiday?
So I would say none, because I don't like to go to the same place every year. I'm a researcher in all senses. So my favorite place would be a new place that is interesting. So I prefer to see something new every time. Also, I'm opportunistic in the sense that I try to combine work with holidays. So I will go 1 week of holiday. So I think the last time I did that, I went to Hawaii, one of the islands in Hawaii, so this was my fourth island. It was very, very nice because the most wild one. So this was a new place, interesting, and with a lot of things to do. So I don't know, maybe next year I would like to visit a new country, so I don't have any plans.
I'll say that I half agree with Ricardo in the sense that usually I have two phases in my holidays. The first one is just exploring the world, visiting new countries and so on. My last visit were to San Francisco and to Bordeaux, two different kinds of things. Bordeaux just here in France to visit the wine museum there and so on. The other half is that we have a lot of friends in the village of my mother-in-law, that's close to Castelló in Alcosebre. It's a place on the beach, and we spend half of the vacations there all day.
How your mornings look like?
So I don't like to have like a fixed pattern in my work. I think also because I travel too much and I have too many different responsibilities that I prefer not to commit to have a rigid structure. But I guess what I can say is that I will do a few things I will do every morning to check all my mail and see if everything's urgent. Check the meetings for the day, or if I need to prepare something before I go somewhere else. And the last thing will be maybe kind of not standard, but I also every morning I say happy birthday to all the people I know. So I do that every day. I think it's one way to remember all the people you know.
Right, you get a cup of tea or coffee?
Coffee with milk and a small sandwich.
Yeah, it's very similar. I think that I used to have breakfast also, and also I just manage all my emails and ones at the beginning of the day, and then I end my morning plenty of meetings. That's and in between the mail and the meetings, I have this kind of creative moment. It's the only moment where I can be creative in some sense, you know. Because I start kind of early, around 7:30, something like that, I have the opportunity to enjoy a kind of quiet moment and try to use my neurons in a kind of, you know, productive way. You know? Because the rest of the day is almost impossible, because I have a lot of meetings with all the staff there and the different groups and so on. And so, I am looking in the sense that as I am in the university, we have a cafeteria there, and some of the things can be downstairs in the cafeteria. And right. That's a kind of, you know, it makes things easier, no? In the sense. And that's a kind of pattern for me.
I'm not a morning person, so so for me, this creative moment is at the end of the day, like midnight. I mean, like, that's my quiet moment, like from midnight. Now I live in the U.S., it's harder because things are shifted, the times, but when I lived in Barcelona, the best time was from like midnight to 2 a.m., I mean, like working alone, also with the day at the U.S., so people were looking at the mail, so that's I'm a night person, an owl.
Probably I am more a morning person.
Yeah. So what are you doing with your spare time, if you have something, or in the weekends?
I think that family and friends, that's my focus. My mother is getting older, and also my mother-in-law, and we need to take care of that. But in spite of that, I spend my weekends with my family, my daughters. I have two daughters. And then with my wife, we went to the movies. And also visiting special places here, in places like Vic or Olot or Palafrugell or Valls or I don't know, indeed the Ebro Delta, you know, we spend some time there. And we like to do that when it's not in the winter or in the autumn or in the springtime, where, you know, not that much people is there.
In my case, I think also I try to be with family and friends, going to a nice restaurant, nice wine, something like you try to do every weekend. And also I try to play tennis every weekend with some friends, sometimes one game per day or at least one game. So I'm not a great player, but I like to play. Or ping pong with my son too, sometimes we play ping pong. We have a ping pong table.
Very nice. So thank you
very much.
And thank you for your time and your conversation and coming here in the center of Barcelona for this podcast. I appreciate
it. Good luck.
Yeah, I think that it could be a good.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find a sum up of this podcast with pictures and interviews at noco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is NoCo Platform. See you next month.